statement for that next introduction. If you guys can read it back, we're good to go. I usually don't need one of these, but we'll make sure everybody hears this. I'm going to come back to the main introduction point. I've actually got a couple pictures of myself in here, so I might take some of your speed away from the point of us. I want to start by telling you broadly what I'm going to try to do here. And classic over-educated road, I don't know where that Steve told me what we talk about. I got my amount to do it all. I'm actually going to try to synthesize my own eyes, my path, and not to tell a story that everybody did, but specifically to the high school living room, try to look back and say what was important as we move forward. So I'm not going to bore you with a full history lesson. There are parts of that I didn't remember. We appreciate some of those points as we get older. I recognize I'm younger than some of you were. As you get older, there's value of looking back. I was forced to look back at this together. Even if you don't get a talk like this, I encourage you to do that yourself. So I do have a almost full table full of family here. But before I even get there, I've got to write about those that are tax dependents of mine that aren't here. So I have three children and a wife. Obviously, a wife and three children who work here. So I do a collage of pictures. I give them credit and recognize who they are. So to your top left is my oldest son, Ethan. Ethan is 8. In the middle on the top is Levi, who will turn 6 later this week. And the far right, the one who looks the most honored is Aubrey, who's the youngest 3-year-old girl, I'm sure will maybe lose a little hair on the left. She's 16. On the bottom left is a picture of all 5 of us. This is the one that has my wife and 3 kids during Christmas. My wife's name is Shauna. I met her at Kansas State, so met on my site at the timeline that she was going to graduate school pursuing her master's degree when I showed up, so I learned from her. The bottom right is a picture of my 3 kids. None of the immediate family members were able to join me tonight. Maybe it's making a bad dad. I overlooked this week's engagement with Levi, my middle kids. He actually has a school event back in St. George, here in Kansas, so they weren't able to come with me. Talk to school night tomorrow, otherwise they'd be here. Probably a little safer sometimes to go to the nursery bus without all of them here. It'll obviously be a little quieter, but I'm sure we're around that room. My second slide, stick with this family point. And to be honest, I didn't know I was going to have as much family here when I got the truck to come here. So this is consistent with some of my key points. I've been blessed with lots of family experience. I started way back when I was 2 until now. Yes, and recognize I'll eventually say not everybody has 3 tables people say I'm going to talk. So I give you that as a bit of disclaimer because I don't have a picture of every one of you up here, so generalize this a little bit. But I do want to walk you through this. The top left is a picture of my dad. And you may not like that specific picture, but I want to make sure I have a picture of him. My 3 kiddos and the girl sitting next to him is actually Stella, which is my brother Dennis's oldest daughter. They live around Austin, Texas. In the top right, you may not be able to see her real well, my mother is holding a little one that's actually 6 kids down there. My parents have 6 grandkids here. I have 3. My brother has 2. I mentioned Stella. The little boy that's in the far left, right, Dennis's kid in the picture, is Dennis's little boy, Hank. And Annabelle is the youngest one that my brother's holding that I have shared as well. So I'm not going to give you a full history of one, but I'm proud of my kids and my nieces and nephews. I'll note that. In the middle right, you can see a picture of Larry and Marcia Porter holding my 3 kids from this past summer. To be honest, I can't remember what I was doing. I was doing something with Shauna. It's nice to get away from the kids every once in a while. And they had enough kids that I think for fishing. And then on the bottom, you can see the picture of my grandma, Mary Moulton, and Gabby, Terry, and Jerry. And then 4 of the 6 grandkids are right next to you. The reason I share this, A, it's smart to give credit for credit to do. I've had a lot of family involvement before I left home, and still do. And I think it's really cool, and I know for me, that they're still having involvement, which is me with the next generation. I want to applaud that. I want to keep going. One of the benefits of my parents helped me in the same high school is I grew up with lots of family right from both sides. That's also not very normal, right? It's hard to pull off these days. That leads to lots of family meeting. Okay. So what's kind of been my time? This is kind of in an academic sense, so I'll partially apologize because I'm an academic, so I shouldn't place things academically. But in 1998, I graduated from here. That doesn't sound like a long time ago for some of you in the room that are older than me, for the high schoolers who were in the blue jackets. That seems like a long time ago. From there, I actually went down to Springfield. So it was Southwest Missouri State, now from Missouri State University. That's where my bachelor's degree is from. From there, I went on to Kansas State and obtained a PhD. From there, I went to Michigan State, where I was on faculty in agriculture economics, and then in 2010, I came back to Kansas State. I'm not going to bore you with all the individual details there. I'm going to give you a quick roadmap of where I've been, and I want to highlight some of the important experiences that took me to that place. That's really what I want to talk about today. So I want to take an opportunity to do a virtual show and tell. I recognize you guys can't see everything, but I have four blankets. One that's a 49er blanket, for those of you that aren't a pro football fan. A K-State blanket, a Michigan State blanket, and another K-State blanket. And follow my last slide, this follows the sequence here. So I put a 49ers blanket because I'm going to talk about stuff before I went to college, under there, give you a roadmap. And then I was still a student the first time I went to K-State. And then when somebody decided to pay me, I went to Michigan State, and then I'm back in K-State. Okay? So that's the general show and tell here. I want to give credit where it's due for what I had growing up, the experiences I had growing up, and how I think they still help me today. So I want to reveal my first one of the blanket here. I'm going to do it now, that's the most of it. And I recognize those of you in the back room can't see everything, that's okay. I'll tell you what I have up here. I have a tool belt and hammer. I have a paint roller and blue tape. I have a very rusty pair of pliers. I have a wire. I have a welding equipment. So I have weed or trim, fuel. I'll get to the other things in a moment. All those things I just mentioned, they are tools of the trade that I used, was taught to use, and so forth when I was in high school. So I grew up on a boat farm. That's where the rusty pliers come in for wiring, right? Just making a joke, fixing a pair of pliers and wire. I don't really care about fixing everything with a pair of pliers and wire. Rather, I do care about learning how to fix stuff and think through it, and don't have to call somebody else for help every time something breaks. Now, maybe my wife might have to call somebody else a little quicker, right? I'm fully aware of that. But there's a lot of value that needs to be able to take the first step of fixing something. Right? So, one of the examples of that, just learning where to advance as a kid helps you no matter what your future path is. That's an example of that. The tool belt. That's synthesizing. Basically, I put that on the first time I went to work for house. So Larry Porter's here, my cousin Jared's here, others are involved with this when we get further away. We're kind of creating more opportunities basically in that story. So that's where I was able to go and help people, you know, thousands of people, painting equipment that deliver for the same reasons. But I want you to think beyond just the actual activity of roofing painting. That's important. I don't want to dismiss it. But the real value for me in that exercise was that was one of the first times that I had to get off the farm and learn to engage the public in various ways. So there's a lot of stuff I learned on the farm, like the work ethic, learning all these things, and so forth, I mentioned. But roofing and painting was the first time I still had to work. Hopefully everybody in the room appreciated that, but I had to do it with the public. But I'm still doing that with family members, right? Okay. That's very important to appreciate. The last thing I have up there is the weed. So I didn't bring a full weed eater, getting lazy, I guess, today. But I brought a trimmer and a thing, yes, synthesized. Symbolize mowing yard. So the first kind of entrepreneurial thing I did in high school was before I had a driver's license, my mother could test with us, I went knocking on doors to get somebody to try to pay me $10 to mow the yard. And I distinctly remember meeting three households and the student who was seeking mower that weren't exactly close to each other. I had to push the mower across town and get the license and kept the mower at my room all over the house. I'm knowing that because I'm not trying to brag about doing that. Because there's a lot learned by going and knocking on somebody's door and trying to sell them something. You don't have to buy everything, right? You don't have to succeed with you every time you knock on the door. But you can learn a lot by simply stepping out and trying to do something. Okay? So for the high schoolers in the room, you never try to sell something. Go try to sell something. Okay? I really don't care what you're trying to sell, but it will force you to interact with the public. Fast forward that point to today, I'm kind of a sucker for my kids knocking on the door. My family knows that I have peanut allergies, so I really don't like to buy peanuts, or peanut cookies and so forth. But I have actually bought peanut butter cookies for a kid, because that's the only thing they showed up to sell, because they, as a kid, were the one trying to sell them. So I basically had a general rule, the kid is the one giving, not a parent. The kid is the one that's asking me to buy something, I would buy it. So you as parents in the room, I encourage you to have a kid do something. I can give you a sell them a paper, for example, you need to buy some sandwich at that point, or you guys follow. Okay? That walks through that list of problems. This is the picture, and the pigs don't show up super well, Steve, but this is a last fact of, let's guess, 1996. Somewhere between 95 and 98, I've been in high school. This is a picture with some of my pigs. I apologize at the bottom, you can't see the pigs. in the spirit of humanity, if it has anything to do with this picture, is these, you know, nobody would brag about extension mail. But what I do want to kind of highlight here is I was given an opportunity to own my own livestock, learn what's that entailed. I've already got to work with my brother, father, and grandpa, so forth, but I had an opportunity to do that and experience the profitability of that. For everybody, that's not going to be enough livestock. I fully recognize not everybody's going to have 10 animals. But if you can work with your kids so they learn those lessons somehow, I think that's very, very important. For me, it involved, right, physically doing the other exercises. I now live outside of Manhattan, Kansas. I'm probably never going to have 12 days in my backyard like this with kids. So one of the challenges for me is to figure out how to mimic those lessons with my kids. Somehow, me and my wife have figured it out. Doesn't have enough kids, but I encourage you to work with your kids when you have kids today or those in the blue jackets sometime in the future, keep those in mind. Okay? I know the roofing, the laying carpet has made a passive comment on those things. Entrepreneurial issues that are embedded in some of my comments here. At the heart of it is, I think any kid that has a chance to do something that's different, that forces them to engage the public, should be supported. Lots of ways to be creative out there. In my case, that involved pigs, roofing, carpet, straw bales. Everybody's mix is going to be different. Okay? I don't know what different mix is, but whether you are the local high school teacher, or a parent, grandparent, whoever it is, I encourage you to help facilitate that. So I look back on all those activities, and at the time, I'll be brutally honest, I was mainly driven by the vengeance and difficult. So let me really know that very well about it. I was motivated, I was trying to say what we did, and I still like money, and I apologize for that. But I can now tell you, looking back, there's a lot of bigger lessons to gain. I got more comfortable talking about it. I learned about my video. Right? There's a lot of things that come with that, that you just encourage kids to get out of kind of experience and work. But importantly, in one of these examples I'm giving you, these were all still here long before I ever left. So everything I'm talking about, right, I was largely junior high or high school in this experience. Okay. Next thing I have up here is FFA. So the last prop I want to talk about is this jacket. Steve, it's hard for me to imagine this thing ever fitting. I don't consider myself overweight guy. I don't think I can even go on that. So I'm not sure what happened, but I do still have a jacket. My mother's been taking care of it. There's a lot of good experiences I had specific to FFA. And I want to give credit to one of them, Tim Ware. I didn't expect to see you here, but it's nice to see you. I actually have a copy. I found this in my office of the recipe I had made. On the back side is an application for one of the entrepreneurial awards that I applied for. I didn't get it, that's okay. I got the package. The picture I showed you earlier, the bids outside of this from this package. There's a lot of things that I contribute to getting more comfortable and being evaluated as a speaker that come with FFA. So if you're following me, I had a lot of life experiences coming out of the talking to them, but the only evaluation I had was whether or not they agreed to let me go to the yard, whether or not they still paid Larry Bill and the house for the exam. I didn't have a lot of direct evaluations. When I got into speaking competitions with FFA that I'm going to do, I got more constructive criticism to say. I wasn't the best at it, I'm not the best at it now. Everybody gets better when you step out and you do something. So I tell everybody, no matter their age, when I look back at that FFA experiences, the piece in particular that I did most was extemporaneous speaking competition. So you walk in and you don't have a roadmap of exactly how to do it, you do your best to compete, the judges tell you how to compete. Not everybody's comfortable with that, but you can learn a lot. I don't expect everybody to enter into that competition next week. But the point is, make yourself step out, engage the public, and take some feedback from it, whatever it is. And I would submit that's good advice whether you are 15 in the room or 75 in the room. You can still contribute to my game better than most. The other reason I bring that particular prop is I had to write an essay. So again, Steve and Tim relate to this, is you have to write a short essay of why you are deserving of this award, so I wrote that FFA award application. And I highlighted two sentences here I'll call your attention to. It is my desire to obtain a degree in agribusiness, so this is where my interest in stronger talents lie. This is the first spot where I'm aware where I put in writing what I thought my drive and purpose was. But it was pretty broad, right? So here I say a degree in agribusiness, but this is where my interest lies. I'm going to talk about the character advantage a lot for the rest of my remarks. And what I want you to take from this is when I was in high school, I thought I had some kind of interest in ag. It's pretty general, right? But I knew it was an ag. And as I got older, I refined it. So, fast forward, 1998, out of Springfield, to my mentor, Ed. And I want to give credit where it's due on things that facilitated that. So most of you in the room probably know this thing called AFA, Agricultural Future of America. And Nancy Marcus, Stephen Joe Brown's daughter, still works there. She's in my class. And I was a recipient of the 1998 scholarship. So first of all, I want to thank the seven partners that are listed up here. But specifically in 1998, those were the seven companies that collected the money up that was matched by the Kinder Foundation to provide that scholarship. I'm not going to do a sales pitch of AFA, rather I want to appreciate publicly that the benefit of me is still something this community very much is active in, and I hope you continue. And I kind of want to write about the community broadly, just in my case, 1998. So because Nancy is still nice to me, we went to school together, I reached out to her, and she was willing to dig through, make some dig through the records. It has historically been in our city. And going back to 1998, there's been 71 different either companies or people that are associated with Monroe City scholarships that have donated. And the size of the town of Monroe City, I think that's pretty cool. So, okay, I think everybody learns implicitly to pat yourself on the back. You don't have to be a company up here, that's not the point. I have put in Yellow, TT Ag Services, my parents, firm, forever, number one. And then here's the rest of that list. When you have 71 companies slash people, you can put them all on one slide. That's a big problem. So there's two slides. And up here, you can see my grandpa's listed. And it's obviously not just my family, there's 71 or 69, 9 times of family members listed up there. But the community collectively should pat themselves on the back for support. And I encourage you to do it going forward. It's very helpful for me to reach out to Springfield, and I think it will be for you to get going forward. What did I do while I was an undergrad? I don't want to talk a lot about what I did in the classroom. I could, but I think you've probably heard those kind of things before. Rather, I want to tell you that I probably learned more outside the textbook in the classroom than I did in it. Most people, when they go off to college, it's their first kind of real weaning experience. So I went to Springfield, got a long ways from family, and was very dear to me and kind of set me up. When I was a surgeon, it was time to spread my wings and learn what's going on. So I worked with a lumberyard, I worked for Eric Peterson, the financial planner. I took me under his wing as an apprentice. I learned a lot about the financial planning business. I helped start a branch in Valley Road in Springfield. I read a lot on futures markets. These are all things that I did that had nothing to do explicitly in the classroom, but all helped shape my next step. I learned a lot about financial markets working for a financial planner. I helped them talk to the public, to become customers, and keep them happy. So it's a communication theme in all of this, we're picking up on my purpose of getting smoother, and that's all I care to follow. I mean, follows the timeline. Hopefully, they're going to be smoother as this moves forward. I read a lot about the futures markets. Not because I thought futures markets were cool, but because I was not even able to think I could make a lot of money when I understood what I read about. Since then, I don't think I could be in the market. I'm on record saying that I was smart enough to be part of the university to afford me. And I'm sincere when I say that and think about it for a moment. I'm not trying to be a jerk, but it exists. But that comes from reading a lot and being motivated to understand. And the next step for me after trying to understand it was I kept going to school, so I went on to graduate school. So I went on to Kansas State. So I moved to Atlanta. At the very top, she's not here. I give you credit. This is where I met my wife, Shawna. I probably should stop talking and say that's where it all stops. That's the most important part of this. But I do want to tell you a little more. Shawna was pursuing her master's degree at Utah when I showed up, so that's where we met. So, I have to tell you, the most important part of me going in Kansas would be my bride. And you guys can appreciate that. From my career perspective, from my personal perspective, the most important parts were, A, I got to start to travel and recognize the world's bigger than not just my own city, not just Missouri, but broader than that. There's a rumor running out here, it's one of my props. I got to go to Australia twice as a grad student, I got to go to Europe, and I went to Canada a couple times as a student. Pretty unique. I was lucky, it was timing, and stuff in this cool projects that allowed me to do that, and I'm thankful for that. But the key part was I recognized all the opportunities are out there. And no one person can take advantage of all of them, but it allowed me to see what I could do if I keep focusing, keep focusing, keep focusing, which leads me to what I call identifying my comparative advantage. Who in here knows what I mean by comparative advantage? If you think you are better at something, and somebody else also thinks you're better at something, average, that's a comparative advantage. I usually joke saying, I think I'm a really good basketball player, and that's simply because I like to play basketball. But then I have an objection, I pay $3 a day every day I go play new ball. So if I'm paying somebody for the right to play basketball, I probably don't have a fair opinion on play basketball, right? So that's an example where you don't have a fair opinion. A little more seriously, for me, my self-identified career advantage is that you're relevant to shit in my fingernails, you gotta be more comfortable talking for a group, and I'm trained to think like economists and recognize trade. And that combination is pretty rare. Now, it's my task to use, but over time I've come to recognize that. Whatever that combination is for you, or might be in the future, again, the blue jackets in the room, I encourage you to work on identifying. If you remember my essay noted earlier, I identified an interest in that. 8 years later, I identified that interest much more narrowly to be in a meat and livestock economist. But also, I had a shift in the street and listened to the way. I'm all going to keep saying shift in the street, I think that's related to the other two. So, fast forward, I got a PhD in agriculture economics at Kansas State in 2006. The first employer after that was Michigan State. So for about 4 years of life, I lived in Michigan. We started our family, our two boys were born there. And I had a position that's similar to what I have now. For those of you who know these, I had a research and extension plan. So I was paid to do a lot of economic research, in my case, issues impacting ag industry, more narrowly livestock industry, more narrowly pigs and cattle, in my case, but the western culture, for example. And then I also gave a lot of talks and engaged producer groups. So I did not bring the Michigan workers to play. Instead of brought the general green like it, you guys might recognize more. But I have a Michigan pork producer in Lincoln that they gave me, because spent a lot of time. That specific producer group is the one I've always spent the most time with, involved in Michigan. And that's important for my growth, for appreciating the challenges that Michigan pork producers are going. For those of you who know something about pork production and gestation stall debates, I'm not going to give a full talk on that. But I was at the table in Michigan when Michigan was trying to decide what to do on that front. And Michigan pork producers and Michigan Farm Bureau were core. So I learned a lot. I was scared of the process and so forth, but I was able to learn some stuff on how to apply textbook examples I got from the school where it continued on and how that's impacting the world. That's all I really want to say about Michigan State, which is questions. Then I went to K-State in 2010. We did that for two reasons. One was family. So East Lansing is about 500 miles from here. And then Kansas is 300. So this is the tons of land that's improved on distance, and in which Chicago lives to put it down. And my wife is originally from Kansas, so definitely a family game and came from the land side. But just as important as a family game was on the professional side, it also grew. So K-State historically has a kind of stronger livestock ag presence in Michigan State. Michigan State has a great deal of accessibility to school, but that's not a fair advantage like it is for Kansas. There was one of my terms. So I had an opportunity to go back and plug into a strong player, and that was hard to pass up and combine it. I'm not going to show you those props and the necessary key points. This is a much longer, purposely more wordy slide than I showed you before. One of the things that comes with getting a pilot iron heater degree, instead of a bullshit degree, right? Yes, pilot iron PhD, you can call it, is you learn to be wordy and start talking more like a lawyer. Right? Well, I put in purple, I'm pending my last kind of full promotion to become a full professor at K-State. And in doing that, I had to kind of defend what I've been doing and whether I'm doing the job, my application being a professional. And I highlighted that here to give you a sense of exactly what it is I'm doing. And I may not clarify that for you so far. I've been talking pretty broadly about that in this forum. What it's underlined is throughout my career, my approach to outreach, producer extension, and research has been to identify critical problems using livestock meat industries. Assess my ability to investigate the issues, initiate appropriate research, and widely disseminate such problems. That's a really long way of saying, see what the real world problems are for meat and livestock industry, distill it down in economic aspects that are at play, figure out if I can contribute to it, and if so, do so. If not, let somebody else. Hopefully, you can appreciate that's a more lengthy assessment than when I started earlier to say, I want to contribute to that. Over time, we mature, recognizing what our preparedness needs are, exactly how we contribute to the world. This is a better refinement of life in my day-to-day. So a day-to-day for Brent, I get a lot of calls from livestock producers, more cattle and hogs, I'm sitting in Kansas, wanting to know what's going on in the market, should I expand my herd, how do I decide to spend it? So me and others in the Ag Fund Department will itself file us, they'll help answer those questions. The decision agent point your own tools in. I study lots of USDA data. I work with a lot of graduate students who run models. I do a lot of that kind of stuff. It's an ongoing effort to hopefully improve my human capital, the better answer that question. No one producer peers are what I'm doing every hour behind the scenes, but hopefully my assistance of them is improved because I'm doing some of the things. That's a really long play telling you what's going on. So I want to pause and synthesize everything in front of you have and the transition needs to kind of glimpse you from ag for a major mission. Before I talk to college, hopefully you can appreciate and reiterate my presence here tonight, I had a lot of engagement from the faculty and my family. Very rare that both sides are coming and moving up today. It's even more rare that both dad and grandpa are coming far. A lot of those kind of things are really cool. They're not as cool. Shape my work ethic. Sometimes you do this, but you actually face the end of that. Really shape my work ethic and my moral compass. The latter one takes more maturity to appreciate. And I probably even have further to go with that, but I appreciate a lot more than when I was 16. Follow my examples. Getting out and working with the public was very important, more than just a dollar. At the time, the dollar motivated me, and now I can tell you a dollar was good at saving, helpful things. That's important, but it also helped me grow. And that was largely facilitated by my family right there around me. So thank you for that. Fast forward to college, the synthesis I would say is the world was exposed to me. So I love being in Monroe City, but there is more to the world in Monroe City. So if you leave, you see that, you recognize opportunity. I think you're traveling, you're going home. I identified finally what my kind of place in life was, compared to advantage, what it is I'm supposed to be doing, which is really has a self-assess. And that's where I started my family. And then since then, post-college professional stage of your life, that's where I've started to leverage. So once you identify your career advantage, put it to work. So hopefully you can appreciate what I'm saying. I think my place in the world is, and that's where I try to focus my efforts. So I joke about basketball, so I like to play basketball. That kind of keeps me sane. But I'm not spending time trying to become a better basketball player. I'm not spending time trying to become an English professor. I'm not spending time trying to become a history professor. Lots of examples I can give you, right? Spending time trying to become a better, meeting my side of the world. Once you identify that, put it to work. Hopefully you make a better place doing that. That's bigger than just professionally. I can tell you my wife and I were able to help the world in lots of ways that I didn't expect, and I anticipate that to grow. As you are able to not only grow yourself and be rewarded for it, you see opportunities to help others. So I saw opportunities for myself to grow. You also see opportunities to help others in different ways. You don't appreciate if you're not engaging with them. All right, so I may have been longer, I might have been shorter, I don't know what Steve wanted there. That's my best attempt at walking through the lens of life, why it matters. If you like this, how she confuses your life, who I am today. But I also want to share a few points about how the lens thinks the world is for ag, and where is Northeast Missouri sitting, and what are some lessons and philosophies that have come across over time as I'm engaging with. Before I share this, I will go a step further and tell you, I give roughly 30 to 40 talks to producers, mainly livestock producers a year, all around the country. Once they were large in Michigan, now they're large in Kansas, with a third mixture around the world. And the points I'm going to give you are shaped by not only their comments, but the comments I hear from other speakers in those settings. First, I think it's very important, not just as an individual recognizing their advantage, but an industry or a region should be the same. We are sitting here in one of the global reference sites in the world. Northeast Missouri is part of the Midwest. It is a global reference. Right? And you all recognize that. It's important not to lose sight of that. Exactly which crop and or which bean protein you produce can change over time. But I would assert that we're always going to be an ag-oriented area. Yes, I had an infection over time. I was listening to the ag components that are disappearing. That's very important. I have told you that you do. What I am going to challenge you to think about is we might keep producing more, keep producing more, but what is asked of us to do so and what the consumer wants may well change over time. And the best way to get that point across is to get you to ask yourself a question. There's a lot of ag commodities in Missouri, so let's just use pork and corn as an example. Do you think the consumers, customers, people we're going to use here, of Missouri pork? Missouri corn have the exact same expectations as me and you. cases that's true, a lot of cases it's not. Okay? So we can talk AMIs, we can talk station trolls, we can talk GM3, we can talk a lot of this thing, we get lots of different calls. But at the end of the day, it's very important to appreciate if you're in production ad that you have to sell your product somewhere, and whoever holds the $9 kind of runs the show. I mean, quite a lot. You gotta understand what they expect. Now, if they're able to learn that, and we can pay up to them as well, communication has occurred. But the world changes, and the sooner that we come to the table and have those discussions, even if we don't like it, or we become informed about it, you're better willing to align. So I encourage you, rather than be against something, whatever the production ad change is that we're debating, to come to the table at least and listen to why there's some concerns. Okay? I want to get on to some soapbox there, but consumers drive whether or not you're going to sell your product. So understanding what it is they want, it's going to be very critical, and the answer to that changes over time. We can talk about gestation so all times are nice. We'll talk about it now. I don't know what the barrel is going to be in 20 years, you're doing something different. Okay. The second thing you might want you to think about, and I understand not all this is popular, but that's okay, it's been a whole mind to get dependent on, is appreciate the importance of trade and with it the danger of protections. So keep in mind that this thing right here, lots of engagement with groups in other countries. That's why I'm going to try to explain all this by three different examples. One of them is pure monetary. So if I gave everybody in the room a choice between 100% of a $20 bill or 5% of $1,000, think yourself a moment which one you would take. I would take 5% of $1,000 because it's $50. I could put a lot more gas in the V8 on the cargo line, $50 if I can, $20. But implicit in that choice, I'm recognizing somebody else is getting $950 that I'm not getting. So I'm revealing a willingness to share it. If you choose the 100% of the $20 bill, the $20 is a lower amount, but you can go to bed and say, I got it all. Right? And there's a mindset of wanting to know I'm here. Somebody focused on growing that amount of pie. Working with others to grow the economic pie, i.e., push something towards $1,000, tends to be willing to share what it takes to grow that pie. And it's not focused on their share of where the pie is. And I encourage you to have that mindset. Now, I want to give you a specific example to meat production. How many boneless pork chops come straight off the pit? How many boneless ham products come straight off the pit? Not many. A lot of pigs that are processed that give us bonus products. Okay? There's a lot of consumers, say my wife is one of them, there's a lot of them in the US, that would prefer a boneless pork chop and boneless chicken breast or whatever they want to use instead of bone in, primarily for convenience. And the meat industry collectively is moving off of those. I think that's a huge win for the meat industry to do that. But that only works if there's a willingness by the industry to encourage investment, adoption, implementation. Technology like deboning an example. Deboning, you have to have a mindset that to grow the economic pie, in this case, grow a pork demand, you got to be willing to share some of the rewards that come with what's necessary to grow them. Boning, deboning is fairly uncontroversial with technology, the reason we use it, but the exact same lesson holds more controversial. So it's a different mindset about being able to look together and grow the pie first, and then figure out what the share is, rather than try to get what the pie. If you do that, I'm pretty sure you have a small pie. My last example. Do you think I can more than double pork consumption within Missouri this year? I'm going to tell you how I can do it. And I'm going to tell you why you don't want me to do it. You guys have seen these kind of maps. Here's a map from USDA. It gives us a sense of where we have pigs in this country. So North Carolina is the darker the green, the more pigs there are. But the bulk of pigs are in the middle of the country. Most of them remember that. Missouri is on that list. Here's a map of our country for U.S. population, it's people population. And now you can see the shade on Missouri is much lower. So, yes, Missouri has more people than Kansas, for example, but it has a lot fewer people than Texas and all the other places. Why am I sharing? Basically, over 4% of pigs, as of December, reside within Missouri, and less than 2% of the people. So, entertain this economic thought. If I was to put up a concrete 12-foot wall around the state border of Missouri and make every pound produced pork stay in the state of Missouri, have a bill of work consumption in a year. I didn't write it down. Right? Well, when you get it clear, what do you think I had to do to get all those pounds into? The price you had to get almost zero, right? You get somebody in the room, you need two more times to really live above the wall. Or two man to come along, or they take it. Right? You following? That's not a way to win. And it's a really naive example because Missouri pork industry imports a lot of mineral, imports a lot of stuff on that side of Missouri to do whether there's a pork herd. So not only do you not be able to sell it all, you have to drop the price, really you wouldn't be able to produce it all, because you would have some grain to eat and so forth that comes from that side. That might sound like a really goofy academic example, but think through what I was walking through and generalize it to the whole country, or North America, or whatever family you want. It's very hard to lead gold if you are protectionistic and don't import freely and export freely along your comparative advantage. Missouri has a comparative advantage in pork production relative to its U.S. population. I'm using pork from the farm, I'm making point on second players. We're better off by trading around the country and with the rest of the world. And if they artificially put barriers up, it's not going to work as well. Okay? All right, so that's enough on ag. At least some of you are really liking the point. But the core point is, big believer, everybody benefits if we focus on what we're good at producing, and we let those that aren't good at it do it, and if we're not, we find something else to produce. It's not an easy thing to do, but the world better off if we did it. So what are some of my advice? This is not just for the young ones and the blue jackets. Give it to producers all the time. It's easier said than done. Worry about what we can influence and control. And that's really hard to tell producers because weather, particularly program producers, has such a big impact on what goes on in the world. I appreciate that. But there's not a lot of gain by trying to outguess a consultant. When I give advice to the board or the pork board on pork demand issues, meat demand issues, it's well recognized that the U.S. economy is going up, pork demand goes up, meat demand goes up. Because meat is an expensive item, and when consumers are happy with all the quality, it's in the buy. That's well recognized. But I'm not really helping pork producers and meat producers if I do any more than just refine them with it, because no one meat producer can make U.S. GDP go up. If you should be aware of it, then you shouldn't worry about what the U.S. economy is going to do next year, which you can't influence. Instead, what I encourage this industry to do is to worry about things like food safety technologies, other things you can actually implement and control that might make your world better. If you generalize that for you, worry about the things you can control and influence. I think you'll make a bigger impact, and then worry about the things you don't have an influence on. Here's a different one that I've never really shared with anybody, is to work on your attitude when you meet your people. As an example, I'm often asked, I'm sure everybody's room is, how are you doing? How's your day going? Right? Pause and be a little intentional about your responding. This is easier said than done. I can grow up this. I can get a little simple. I would have a head. Even more than that, I encourage you all to work on it as well. The answer I attempt to give, if I am sure enough to pause before I respond, I'll be better at it, is neither my familiar upright, beyond that, is DJs. Now, I often get this when I'm walking over to the basketball, some of my buddies. And part of that response is maintaining contact. So I'm fortunate that me and my family are healthy. I'm thankful for that. That's important. And all your stuff is kind of details. So I'm not making crappy days because I had to tell a producer that you're better not doing what you want to do. It's not that I enjoy that, but that's a detail for my job. I'm having a great day because the boss is happy. That's fine. Be proud of it. But don't let it lose contact. Why do you be fortunate for what you give it. That's easy to help. So just give it. Don't worry about that. That kind of positive attitude is still a little unconscious. If we can be a little intentional in that, be a little more positive, have an attitude of gratitude, which is the last thing I have here, I honestly think it'll still look over me. My last point I would take in this up here is to recognize and seize opportunities that come across. I'm currently reading a book by Tony Dungy. He's in the Hall of Fame. He's a former Colts coach, which you guys don't know. And it's actually a coach's book. And one of the points I really liked that he made a few weeks ago was opportunities come to those that are ready for them. And one of the specific points that he made was he was trying to go through the ranks. I don't know where he started, but as an assistant coach working towards NFL head coach, he tried to not focus on what jobs would be available and what other people are going to apply against him, but rather what can he use to improve his situation. So be ready to seize opportunities and focus on what you can influence. In that case, Dungy did not influence what job comes up with. Right? He keeps making goals have a job for example, but he can be ready for it. So if you have that approach to where you are working to improve yourself, focus on what you can influence, take advantage of the opportunity in the funnel, I think you can be more successful. black slide, black and gold is represented in River City. This is thank you. I go full circle. Appreciate my family coming here for all the treats they've given me. More drama with the community. When I reach out knocking your door to try to go to your yard, thanks for not shooting me. Fast forward, you know, thanks for being a supporter and the FA scholarships and those kind of things. I encourage you to keep doing that and support the general community. If you ever want to reach out to me, this is my standard contact information. I'm more and more on Twitter. Most of you probably aren't on Twitter, but those of you who don't know what that is, it's a college teaching. Thank you.